It's SC Wild with Major Billy Downer from the Department of Natural Resources. Major Downer is here to answer your questions about the great outdoors. Call in now at 888-898-2525 and join SC Wild on the Sports Talk Media Network.
All right, it's time for another edition of SC Wild from the Department of Natural Resources here on Sports Talk. And for that, we welcome in the Major, Billy Downer, who has been a busy little bee, a little busier than I thought. Not only was he out in Las Vegas for the Major Gun Show out there, but didn't tell us this, he's gotten engaged over the last month or so. So first of all, welcome back from Vegas and congratulations on your engagement.
Thank you. We did not go to the Elvis Chapel alone. So let's don't start any rumors. No. Yeah, so thank you very much. But we did enjoy last week. Got to see a lot of our bigger vendors here in South Carolina that are producers here. You know, FN America, huge producer of rifles for the military, for law enforcement. Then you've got PSA Armory, Palmetto State Armory, everybody knows them.
Yeah.
But they've just gotten so big, and their Bear Insurance program, Right to Bear Arms Insurance, it was there as well, huge program. And then you've got other groups that we had here as well, some smaller companies out there, Rugged Suppressors. There's several suppressor companies in this state that produce suppressors here. Rugged was there, got to speak to them, spoke to like I said, a couple other different vendors that we have here in the state, just glad to have them here. Explain to them, you know, all these firearms, if you create a firearm and you build firearms, you pay a federal excise tax. And like FN and PSA pay thousands. Then you've got one, another small one here, and they're not small anymore, but Jacob Gray up in upstate. And they pay thousands of dollars, and I mean tens of thousands of dollars in excise taxes for the guns they build, and they oftentimes don't know where that money goes. And I was there to help them kind of understand, hey, our wildlife section, our wildlife management areas, our public range program all comes from the money that you put into the excise taxes that come back to us with the federal Pittman-Robertson and the Wildlife Restoration Act. That's how we do what we do. That's how we plant dove fields. That's how we provide public hunting opportunities. It's how we build our ranges to provide free public opportunity for shooting. Mm. They're very interested in that. So that was the purpose of going. Did that with Will Dillman in the wildlife section. We did a good job walking around and just kind of really trying to take time with all of our big vendors from South Carolina to thank them and just remind them, hey, this is what your money's doing. If you got questions, call us. We'd love to show you some of our WMAs or our ranges. And that it goes off well. It goes over well. They really appreciate that. But so that was the SHOT Show wrap up. But today I want to hit, before we run out, I want to give these folks some time. I've got two guests on the show tonight. I want to welcome Tanya Darting and Ben Dyer from our Marine Resources section down in Charleston. Got some phone calls last week about the freeze we had and cold weather, and there's been some reports of some fish kill in our inshore environment. So wanted to kind of talk about that with them, let them have a chance to talk about the biology there a little bit of our fisheries, how that works, and how bad it really was or wasn't. We've talked about this on the show before about cold weather and what it does to our sea trout. But want to welcome Tanya on and Ben. Let's get them on the show. Tanya, you here?
I am.
Oh, thanks for coming. And Ben, you on now too?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
All right, great. Great to have y'all. We've talked about this in the past, like I said, before you got on, and just before about cold weather, and Robert Bowles was very good about explaining how cold weather, there's some natural fish kill happens sometimes with our sea trout that can't take that cold weather. Can we talk about that from a biology side a little bit? What happens to, why is it that those fish can't take that cold water?
Well, that's a great question. I think Robert sounds out that discussion really well when you've had him on the report of just remembering that these are natural events and they happen, and usually on a time frame, historically we see them every 5 to 10 years. And we're right about schedule because it's been about 7 since our last one. And from a physiological side of things, different species just have physiological processes that are different. Different enzymes work differently at different temperatures. And sea trout is probably one of our most sensitive species, fish species anyways. And that one just doesn't handle temperatures really below about 46.5 degrees very well,
oh,
which
wow.
is Fahrenheit, which is about 8 degrees Celsius. And they don't do well. And if you get down close to 5 degrees, then you're really looking at some mortality events, some hard mortality events, and not a very long time period.
So how often does our water get that cold? In particularly, I guess we're talking about Charleston Harbor, our estuaries, right?
Yeah, so temperature is really our best predictor of what kind of impacts we're going to have on some of our resources. And so we tend to use that because it's easy. And so when we see these forecasts that are coming in that we're going to get some colder weather, we immediately start looking at what the trends have been, how warm it's been, how quick of a decrease we've had. Because usually if you have a little slower roll into the colder temperatures, the organisms tend to acclimate a little better and they handle it longer than if you have a really fast change. They can move into deeper waters, move into areas that had a little bit more temperature refugia for them. And so that tends to help. We tend to see them every 5 to 10 years. We tend to see some good ones, you know, that have a major impact on some of those resources.
Right. So what, you know, I think most often it seems that we talk about sea trout. What mm-hmm. else is, are there other species that are affected by that cold weather?
Well, so the two that we typically monitor for are sea trout and then also for white shrimp. And they're a little bit more sensitive. We start worrying about them at about 9 degrees Celsius, so a little bit warmer. They're even more sensitive that sea trout tend to be. But sea trout are usually the first ones that we tend to see on the fish side. Red drum, we tend to see some of the younger ones. Don't do so hot with that either, with those temperatures. So those are the main ones that we see, but you'll see sea trout. I mean, sheep's head as well. Come up
okay,
in some
wow.
of those if you get really cold events. Yep.
Oh, I don't like hearing that because I love my sheep head too. So let's talk for a minute real quick. So you said 9 degrees Celsius. For those of us like me that are dumb and don't remember that, convert that for me. Where is that in the Fahrenheit scale?
That's about 48 degrees Fahrenheit. Yep.
Okay, so still at 48 degrees.
46.5. Yeah, that's about 48 for shrimp are the critical ones. And then sea trout are a little bit lower, about 46.5.
So literally a degree and a half difference, and they mm-hmm. start having problems with it. Okay.
Yeah.
So white shrimp, typically, so when we think about white shrimp, for those that are listening, when people are out shrimping, are they shrimping during the shrimp season for, are they going to take white shrimp as well as brown shrimp?
I'll defer to Ben, but I think that's a yes, right, Ben?
yes. So, you know, we see them at different times of the year. You know, you're going to get your roast shrimp at the beginning of the season, towards the spring. And then in the summer is when we typically, if we see more brown shrimp, that's when we'll see them. And then you get that fall crop as well. That's, you know, our white shrimp are our overwintering shrimp. So those are the shrimp that stay here throughout the year. And what we're protecting now, and that's why it's critical for us to ensure that, you know, we're paying attention. So what we're protecting now is the shrimp that we'll see again next year that'll be our roe shrimp that will then perpetuate next year's shrimp. So that's why we want to make sure we're paying close attention.
So in other words, this a shrimp kill with cold weather can affect next year's shrimping season if it's bad enough. Is that kind of what I'm understanding?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes.
Yep. Okay, good. All right. So, I mean, not good, but I mean, good that I'm understanding it. So when it comes to fish like sea trout, I guess the obvious question would be, is it a size thing? If they're big enough, can they take it? Or is it the small, or it doesn't matter?
Well, for sea trout, it's actually the opposite. So it's the larger fish that really struggle with those cooler temperatures. And so similar to some of the reports that we received last week and this week is that when they're seeing those sea trout, it tends to be the larger one. And this year, the reports that we've been getting for folks that have actually cut into them and taken them to look, it was a lot of females this time too, which are the bigger sea trout. Yep.
Okay. Interesting. Which I would not have thought. Yeah. I would have thought a larger fish could withstand that. But why is that? Why is the larger fish more susceptible?
Oh, I don't know, but that's a symbol. That's a great answer. It's just the physiology changes, and it's okay. Kind of common. I mean, similar to striped bass, if you think about it on the freshwater side during the summer, right. When you have really high temperatures, it's those right. bigger striped bass that really have a hard time with those thermally stressful environments, and it's the same way with sea trout, just in the opposite direction, right, with the cold.
I didn't mean to throw a curveball, but it's one of those, I'm like, why are the big fish? You know, why you think big, you think that they can take things better. But that's interesting. So we've had some reports I know I've heard about. So where was our what are we? I know we're still gathering some information, but what is the outlook for this cold kill, if you will?
Well, so our initial one is that it really is going to be pretty minor, and maybe I should mention how we kind of determine that. First of all, we're looking at immediate impacts, and we rely on what our biologists are seeing in the field. But really, more importantly, while the event's going on and shortly after, is that what we get reports from the general public are, and to do that. And so it's where they are and then how much we're seeing. And so far on this event, we've only had 5 reports coastwide in terms of those events, and none of them have been very large. I mean, it's been a handful of sea trout. I think the one on Dewey's was the one that I saw a picture with that had the most fish in it. In a single picture for a single report. And then we've been out this week doing some drone work. We had some drones down the Ace Basin yesterday, and then our partners at CCA had some drones up in the Murrells in Winya Bay area a few days ago. And neither of those techniques really spotted much on the surface at all. We didn't see any widespread fish kills or anything. And then our inshore fishery section has standardized trammel surveys up and down the coast that we look in the estuaries, and that's one of our really good ways of seeing what's happening too. And we were in the Wando on Tuesday and down in the Colleton and Port Royal Sound today, and we're not seeing anything on the surface in terms of that. We'll be in the Ashley River again tomorrow, and so we're just out there looking to see what's coming up and what's in the areas. It is important to note that we aren't going to see the majority of the fish that die, right? So some of them are going to float, but in our estuaries, because we have so many tides, a lot of them are on the bottom and they're going to flush out. And so
initially, and get eaten by everything that bites and stings in the salt water anyway.
Yeah. Yep. And so initially we're looking to see what do we see on the surface as an indication. And right now that doesn't look like it's going to be very bad. However, we continue to look at our standardized surveys over the next couple of months, really through the spring. And then we look to see how those catch rates compare with the last few years, like when we have good sea trout years or warm weather years. How does that look? And that really tells us what the long-term impacts, because that'll take into account all the stuff we didn't see on the surface either.
Okay. So, Ben, it does. Yeah. Ben and Tanya, I'll ask you both this question. I'm just thinking through it. So, typically, those that like to catch sea trout, you see in the late fall, October, November, the bite picks up usually every year. Doesn't that ring true usually? when things get a little cooler, which is interesting that it gets cooler, where is that? Is there a zone in temperature where their activity picks up to cause that? And then does that make sense what I'm asking? Why is it that in the fall, late fall, when it gets cooler, they get the bites better? Why is that?
Well, I'm kind of guess on this one a little bit, but I would wager that it's probably because they're coming off of the super high summer temperatures, which aren't great either, right? Those are thermally stressful for a lot of fishes when we get into that August, September timeframe. And so when it starts cooling off in the fall, they have more oxygen in the water, they're able to move around better. You know, they're probably hungry. They can do a little bit more chasing the prey. And so feeding probably picks up. And they're probably trying to put on weight, you know, energy before the winter sets into.
All right. So let's flip that around. When go ahead, Ben. Sorry.
No, I was going
to
say.
Anything else to add to that? Okay.
That last bit, trying to get that energy, before that winter season. And then following that, you know, those are the temperatures that they – prefer, you know, each kind of species has that kind of range, and then as they move into spawning, once they get past that winter, you know, you kind of see that as well. So as they fatten up and move into into that season. So,
yeah. When is our spawning typically of our sea trout? Is it does it follow with red drum, or are they different?
Oh no, they're different. They have a really long spawning period. They're going to start coming up in the spring, so really like about March-ish they'll start into April, but then they can be spawning as late as August and September on some on our cooler summer years. You know what I mean?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And versus redfish, which spawn
in the fall. Yep.
In the fall,
September,
okay.
October, November, maybe pushing a little bit into November. Yep.
Okay. All right. So where would you say our sea trout population is right now? Is it high, low, about normal?
So before the winter events this year, our sea trout populations were looking good, and I think they're sitting just a little bit above normal right now.
Okay. All right. Yep. And versus red drum, I know people are familiar with the our red drum where we are helping the red drum population out. Are we still doing that? We're still putting smaller red drum out?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, red drum is every year that we part of our stock enhancement program. And it's an experimental stock enhancement program, but it's meaning that it helps us to answer questions about the wild population, but it also
sure.
does provide additional opportunities for recreational anglers at the same time. And so we
absolutely.
Average usually about 100 about a million fish a year, meaning like small juveniles go out. This past year, we actually hit a record, which we hit like 2.7 million that went out last year with our production.
Wow.
So, So we're trying to help them as much as we can.
Yeah.
And what do we see that doing? Go ahead, Ben. I'm sorry, Ben. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. I was going to say it's important, and I'll actually let Tanya kind of answer that next question and kind of get to my point in a second. Go ahead, Tanya. Sorry.
Oh, I didn't hear what the question was.
I was asking about we were talking about the red drum versus trout for a minute. We've been talking about when their spawning time is and where our populations are as far as our red drum and sea trout. Mm-hmm. Sea trout we do not help propagate at all. And they seem to be doing fine, seem to be doing well. We'll see what we come out of the freeze. It doesn't seem to be a major event. Red drum, we're constantly putting young fish into the population. How does that, as far as our adult population, so many anglers today prefer to catch and release, it seems to me. Everybody where I go, people, they catch and release me. I'd rather catch and release red drum, frankly, because I don't like the meat as good as black drum. That might sound crazy, but I just don't. They don't taste as good to me. Where's our population at on red drum now?
Well, so our population for red drum is running below our long-term averages right now. And I think most folks on the phone probably know that we're kind of in the middle of a red drum stock assessment at the moment at the regional scale. And so we're kind of waiting to see what that ends up coming out with to kind of give some official notice in terms of where the status of it is. We're waiting to see what those results are right now.
Sure.
But our own independent surveys are showing that they are running a little bit below average or below average right now.
Okay. And that's based on when you say average, based on what time period when we say average?
Oh, when we have our independent fishery survey, we usually compare that to our long-term average, which is usually the average from across a decade, about 12 years, like the prior ones.
Good. Yep. Cool. Well, Ben, I know you want to say something. Go ahead and hit it.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to add to that the stocking program is, they do an amazing job. And just want to remind folks, too, that, the goal is not to be able to, provide enough to be able to support our resources, and we need to we definitely rely on those, bag limits, size limits, things that we need. And looking, as Tanya mentioned, we're going through a stock assessment now and looking at on the outcome of that, and then moving forward. And so, to be able to still manage that fishery, it definitely takes everyone to assist. And this, like you said, it's a largely catch and release fishery. Recreationally but seeing what we can do in the future and that'll be to see what comes out of that assessment.
Absolutely. So we've talked about, you know, red drum. We've talked about sea trout, white shrimp. Anything more, Ben, on the shrimp side as far as management right now? How is our coastal, well, if I ask the word, how's our coastal shrimp population, how would you answer that?
Sure. The past year, our numbers and abundances have been good. There's been some concern. I don't know if people follow along, but the market for shrimp, along with foreign imports of shrimp, have definitely kind of hurt the fishery and industry itself. But as far as our resources are concerned, this past year we had good abundance. And leading up to this cold weather, we actually saw that heading in that direction, and it closed our general trawl zone. So trawling can only happen right along our coast and just offshore, all the way out to, we have state waters all the way out to 3 miles, and then past that is federal waters. And so we actually, on the 15th, we closed the majority of the general trawl zone to shrimp trawling. And then on the 24th, we have these provisional areas which are out close to that 3 mile line, and we closed those as well on the 24th. Now, federal waters are still open. Again, those are further off, and based on, you know, going out and the temperatures, what we're hearing from some of the folks that are still industry that are out further out, and then talking closely with our partner states in Georgia. And some of their assessments, the abundances look like it wasn't a major event. When you get temperatures this low, you know, we did break that threshold for several days. So there is going to be some level of shrimp that succumbed to that. But as of right now, we don't feel that that's going to be a major event. We're hopeful to get out. We don't know the exact numbers yet. We're going to get out within the next 2 weeks and to be able to sample in our local waters and get a good eye on things. But we're not concerned that it was a major event like we saw the most recent one. I think Tanya alluded to that back in 2018, where we were
right
21 days below our temperature. So yeah, that's we're hopeful.
So- Let me ask you, which we're talking about water temperature. When we say 48, 46.5, we're talking about water temperature. What does it take?
Correct.
Is there an air temperature? How long where do we have to be on air temperature to get water down to that? Does that make sense? Is that a fair question?
Fair question. It's kind of hard to answer because it varies sure. quite a bit based on wind can affect it quite a bit too. You get a real windy day with overcast, and the same air temperature can drop the water temperature quite a bit because that wind digs into the water, creating those waves, and that can affect right. it a lot faster, as opposed to maybe you have the same temperature day, but you got a bright sunny day, which can actually mitigate those air temperatures. Sure. So your water temperatures typically don't fluctuate as quickly as your air temperatures
right.
do. So, it definitely has an effect.
Well, look, y'all, Ben, Tanya, we're right at the time limit. We're out of time, but I want to thank y'all for coming on tonight, talking about what's going on with our fisheries right now inshore and where we are with our sea trout and red drum population and shrimp. Appreciate y'all being a part of the show, and thanks for providing the information tonight.
Thanks for
the opportunity.
Yeah. We'll do it again sometime. I want to probably do another show on shrimp, and a lot of folks have a lot of interest in shrimp, but thanks again, Ben. Thanks, Tanya, for being on the show tonight.
Yep, thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you, Major. Great job, sir.
Thank you. That's going to wrap it up for us tonight. Friday, tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, last 2 days of waterfowl season. We'll wrap it up.
Look forward to getting with you in a couple of weeks. You're at your new offices, so that's wonderful as well. You got a lot going on. And that's Major Billy Downer from the Department of Natural Resources. That is SC Wild here on Sports Talk for this Wednesday night. That'll do it. And thank you, Josh. Thank you, everybody, for being with us. We'll see you tomorrow night.